Welcome to the Love Positivism podcast. I'm Shireen Oberg, and I'm a yoga teacher and author devoted to the path of healing and heart-based living. And I want to help you to step into what you truly are and to your highest potential. On this podcast, I share with you tools and insights to help you move ever forward on your spiritual and healing path. With guests from all over the world, from different wisdom traditions, I wish to create a web of loving energy that permeates the whole world to create more love and peace. You can connect with me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube for more guidance and love.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode. Welcome, Diana. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, Shireen. Thank you so much for having me back on.
I'm so excited to talk to you. We have a lot going on right now, and we wanted to share a little bit about the Pisces new moon, and also that we are having a ceremony on that weekend and actually on International Women's Day, which felt so aligned. And it feels such, it feels just beautiful to be in circle on that specific day. I'm really excited to share a little bit more about that. And Diana, maybe you can start to introduce yourself a little bit, and then we can get into what we're doing and what this Pisces new moon is all about.
Sure. So some of you may have heard me on Shireen's podcast before. I'm Diana Wesley. I'm an evolutionary astrologer, which means that, I'm getting over a cold, which means that my astrology work kind of centers around our soul's evolution. When I'm doing a reading for someone, or when I'm doing work with Shireen and we're talking more about transits, what's going on energetically, I'm focusing on kind of where our souls are coming from personally and collectively in prior incarnations, in history, where they are in the present moment and kind of what they're growing or evolving toward. So a lot of my work centers around that. But something else that I'm very passionate about is bringing in asteroids into my work and into my readings, particularly asteroids named after goddesses, divine feminine figures, feminine mythological figures as well, and kind of building out the feminine, or perhaps even the feminist side of the astrological story, the celestial story, since so often those figures, that feminine element gets kind of left out or maybe overlooked a bit when we're looking at just kind of the traditional planets in astrology, mostly named after male gods and deities. So that's kind of the crux of my work, and I'm very excited to be working with Shireen. We're both super passionate about kind of this divine feminine work, and so meeting on International Women's Day feels really, really special. It feels like, especially with the energies surrounding this new moon, some of the goddesses, the goddess asteroids that are going to be at play, it just feels very fitting, very relevant, very timely, divinely timed, perhaps. So that's me in a nutshell, and I'm really excited to share more today and next week as well.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you for sharing that. And we are, so me and Diana, for those of you who haven't been in any of our ceremonies, we've been working with that for a couple of years now together at different points of time, and especially during full moons, new moons, eclipses, equinoxes, and yeah, different points. And we really built a beautiful, just a flow. What is ceremony and what is ritual? It's really personal, but with my background working a lot in this spiritual field of channeling and with these different frequencies, and Diana as well, it's been a beautiful, especially when we are doing circles, we always have women there. So we were speaking about this the other day. If we get back to the International Women's Day theme, that we are definitely doing something to support the divine feminine. So if we look at how we want to balance, if we look at the world in a higher level and we see it as yin and yang being that first duality, we want to bring back balance. And if we look at historically, the spiritual field was for a long time just dominated by the masculine. And it's not that it has to be a balance. It's not about one side taking more. It's just bringing in our strengths. And being in ceremony, I really feel like that's something that we've done throughout our whole female lineage, because we're so connected to the cycles, to the earth, to the different elements. And it feels so natural to be in that and to tap into the different mythologies, which you share so beautifully, and tapping into both chanting mantras, practices that are really potent and that helps us to tap in. And we have different backgrounds, so I think that's what makes it beautiful also. So for anyone who wants to join, so International Women's Day is on March 8th, and it's a day which we celebrate women's achievements. It's the day is also the intention behind this International Women's Day is also to educate and raise awareness for women's equality, a positive change in that whole field. There's so much that can be done, because if we look at the work that the organizations that are working for equality and women's rights, like UN Women, for example, where I've actually interned, so I've been on that level working on, it's on a very high level if you compare to grassroots movements. And one of the grassroots movements is what we are doing. I see that this wave of new spirituality, of connecting back to our old mythologies and breaking away from these patriarchal ways and structures that we've been under, which doesn't allow for that softness and intuition to come in, and kind of took away also power from your own heart to connect with the divine. Because all of what we practiced in traditional religions for the couple of thousand years has been so connected to that masculine, very authoritative, and structured in a way that can actually hinder our spirituality. And that's something that I wrote in my thesis on coping through religion and spirituality, that religion and spirituality are interwoven. They're never separated. It's just that one can be more community-based, one is more individual, but they can also be the same. Like they go, it's like yin and yang, so they complete each other. But we are so excited to do this. And this is also leading into another birthing, because we're in the end of the zodiac, and we are feeling that sense of completion leading up to the equinox. And the equinox is such an important point, both from the ancient, like the wheels of the year. Also in my Kurdish heritage, we celebrate the new year at the spring equinox. That's in the northern hemisphere. So what are you seeing now? What are you excited about for this new moon? And yeah, just tying that in with International Women's Day, what are you seeing is prominent in this chart?
Well, I just wanted to reflect on a few of the things that you shared really quickly there, Shirin. And, you know, it's interesting because I recently had an astrology client who was kind of trying to choose a path forward. And in her mind, being on a spiritual path meant that she couldn't pursue the path of motherhood, and that all of her examples of kind of, you know, spiritual leaders, you know, mindfulness teachers, meditation gurus, you know, whatever it may be, had all kind of had to come to this crossroads and made a choice. Am I going to pursue the path of kind of building a family, or am I going to pursue the path of kind of spirituality, introspection, things like that. And I feel like even on this very deep level, it's almost like in order to pursue a spiritual path, we have to put part of our femininity, like a pretty significant biological part of our femininity, something that, you know, not all women, but a good portion of women, they do feel that call, that urge, that desire to mother in some way. And if that kind of is at odds with our spirituality, then, you know, where does that leave us? And so I think that there is this evolution right now where we are, by kind of reconnecting with more maybe goddess spirituality or more kind of bringing more of the feminine into religion, into spirituality in general, we're starting to see that, you know, these two things don't have to be at odds with each other. We can be women in whatever way that looks like for us, you know, for others who embody the feminine qualities as well. Again, those feminine qualities aren't at odds with spirituality. You can be a parent and you can also be spiritual. You know, these things can work together and actually flow together really beautifully because, you know, through some of the challenges that might arise through certain paths, including parenting, you know, we can grow spiritually and evolve and develop. So it just really depends on the person. But again, I think that there is this new wave of feminism that's both you know, kind of felt on maybe a more what's the word? Well, more mundane, non-spiritual level, but also kind of in spiritual communities as well. So it's been really interesting to kind of observe that kind of old belief or old thought and also see how that tide is shifting. And speaking of tides shifting, we do have Pisces season. Pisces is associated with Neptune, you know, the god of the seas and the ocean. Pisces is very much an energy of tides changing, ebbing and flowing. You know, we evolve slowly but surely. And Pisces is kind of this reminder that nothing ever quite stays the same. We're always being moved slightly by our emotions, by you know, kind of the spiritual energies that exist or the spiritual energies that surround us. Nothing is really ever staying the same, even if on the surface it appears to be. And so Pisces energy is this reminder again that we always are coming to these natural endings and new beginnings. And Pisces is the end of the astrological year. Aries is the beginning. It is a sign of drawing things to a close, but in order for a new birth, a rebirth to happen. And so this Pisces new moon is very much an energy of healing, of catharsis, of kind of, you know, liberating ourselves and freeing ourselves from old karmic cycles and patterns. And again, this is personal work that we're doing. This is collective work that we're doing. And when it comes to kind of this work around the feminine, you know, I get the sense looking at this upcoming new moon that a big call that we're working with right now, and actually there's a lot going on astrologically that all kind of supports this, including Chiron in the North Node coming together in Aries, Chiron the wounded healer, Aries, you know, being a sign associated with courage, with war, with conflict, with self-assertion, and the North Node being our evolutionary growth opportunity. There's this feeling that right now we're really healing kind of our relationship to the masculine on some level, but that we're also healing our relationship to, you know, our ability to assert ourselves, to kind of own and harness our inner warrior energy in a way that suits and serves us, that may maybe honor or serve the feminine a little bit more than the traditional sense. So there's a lot of stuff astrologically going on right now that all kind of supports the energy of this upcoming new moon. But a couple of things that really jump out at me are that the new moon is sitting in opposition in the sky. So it appears to be exactly kind of polar opposite to Black Moon Lilith and True Lilith, two separate points. One is kind of the average of the other. But Lilith in the sky, who is just currently in Virgo, And Lilith is kind of the feminist icon in a lot of ways, but in some ways she's linked to kind of an older version of feminism, a version of feminism that had to fight so hard. And you know, the current or newer wave of feminism is able to exist in general because of earlier waves where there was a much bigger fight. There was a lot more rage, a lot more anger, a lot more hurt, a lot more pain. There was a much taller wall that women were having to climb over. And people, there were a lot of men involved in these earlier feminist movements as well. And so Lilith kind of harbors and carries some of that rage, that anger, that pain. And so much of working with her story, with her process, you know, in her myth, she's supposed to be Adam's first wife, but she leaves him because he wants her to be subservient to him. And she says, no, we're both created from the earth, we were created equally, and so I won't be subservient to you. And eventually she just leaves. She sprouts wings, becomes this demon figure, goes off to the Red Sea, and kind of undergoes this whole purging process. And then Adam creates Eve from his rib to kind of remind her that you know, he comes first, she comes second, and that women are kind of meant to serve men. That's a whole other story because, you know, things go in a different direction with Adam and Eve ultimately, but let's focus on Lilith. Lilith is out, you know, harboring all this anger. She's like, man, like, we were supposed to be equal and we weren't. You know, I feel outcasted, I've been vilified, I've been demonized. And so she's carrying all of this woundedness, all of these hopes, dreams, expectations that are dashed and shattered, all of this anger. and in some ways we can find, you know, the feminist movement kind of like stuck in that part of the Lilith struggle, not always, but at times. Like, we can feel that anger, we can feel that rage for wrongs done, for where things have been, for continuing and continued inequalities and inequities that exist between the genders. And so that's kind of where we can get stuck in a little bit of a Lilith wound. But the ongoing kind of evolution of Lilith is that she ultimately kind of, at least from an astrological perspective, comes into her power, and she has to purge and release all the hurt, all the wounds, all the anger. Really, really good Virgo, Pisces polarity activities, purging, releasing toxins, shedding and releasing stuff that's not ours to carry, cleansing ourselves and our souls of the hurts, the wounds. And then ultimately she comes back into her power. She's re-empowered and she's able to enter into partnerships, relationships with others in a truly equal way. And in a way where she's honoring herself, her wildness, her femininity. So it's not necessarily an equality where she becomes like the other. It's an equality where she's her true self and is equal as her true self, which is, again, I think another theme that kind of comes up when we think about new waves of feminism. Sharon and I were talking about this the other day, like, what does it look like to really get to be oneself? You know, and not just, again, the feminine, there's so much more to this, what we originally thought or considered to be, you know, kind of a polarity or a duality. There's so many shades of gray. Like, what does it look like going forward for everybody to be able to stand in their power to fully, truly be themselves? And I think, again, that's kind of the new wave of this movement, whether we call it the feminist movement or something different, the humanist movement. we're really shifting now. I'm going to pause there. There's one more thing I want to share astrologically, but I know that Sharon had so many powerful thoughts around this, and so I'm going to pass the baton back over to her to share a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I can just agree with everything that you said, and also, like, point out that there's certain narratives. So one thing, the first thing I would like really sparked within me, and we spoke about this earlier as well, when you said that someone a client of yours saw that there's two different paths, either the spiritual path or the motherhood. And that's like the first hijacking that happened, that unless, so there's different traditions. So since I have my degree in religious studies and studied so many different paths now, I feel like there's this thread of, and not all, definitely, but definitely within Christianity and certain traditions from East as well, it is high, or it's kind of like if you do walk the path of releasing desires, releasing the body, releasing the needs, desire, you know, all of that that we connect with the goddess, that then you are pure and you can tap into a higher enlightenment. And that's the first lie and the first like downfall in some way, like it's a big misconception. And I've understood that just by being in different traditions and seeing that, okay, so within Christianity, there was something that evolved when it came to chastity and the diminishing and the suppression of the body. So something happened there. If you look at the other Abrahamic traditions, like Judaism and Islam, it's very much, how do you say, it's positive to get into a partnership. That's part of the spiritual path. It's almost like the opposite, like you should be in a partnership. So that's a different thing. And then we have all of these traditions where we have like the fasting is important because it does clear our mind and energetic body. But if you're suppressing everything and you no longer can, this whole non-identification with the body, you can do it on a logical mind, but it's also an important vehicle for prana and life force energy. So it is a very good example that you gave what's happened when we colonialize the mind with something, the truths, old beliefs, old paradigms, that I can either go this path or this path. I have to either be perfect, whatever that is, or I have to release, like, but isn't like one of the most highest spiritual paths is to have a child and become a parent. That's one of them. It's complete devotional practice. It's a challenge. It's meeting all of your fears, all of your, it's a plunge into the dark goddess. So that's one thing that I see. So that really lit me up. And then also think about this. So from my perspective, and something that I wrote also in my background, is that I do also have dedicated a lot of my life energy into sexual and reproductive health and rights, SRHR. And that's one of my degrees as well, and something that I've put into research and scientific articles. And what that taught me is that half of the human population are second class citizens still. And that's the female population. We cannot get away. The Western feminism hasn't reached that far. And still in the West, in a country like Sweden, we still have underpaid females because the job that they are doing is still considered not as important as the traditional male jobs. And it doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman doing the job. It's still, it was based like the nurses, for example. It was expected of women to do it for free in the beginning, until one woman in the UK said, but we are preventing death with this work. If we are not doing this work, more people are dying in the hospital. So nursing and care, and still to this day, midwives and nurses in the world are not considered to be as equipped as they should to be able to take informed decisions. And that's a problem too in the birthing space. So in Sweden, we have midwifery-led births. And still you have a doctor that, of course, can take when something is very acute or something is happening, they take a decision on that sign. But still, it's a very big difference from the US, for example. So we have still, yeah, Diana.
I just want to share really quickly on that point.
Yeah, I
I
want to hear.
actually, when I gave birth just 4 months ago, I was in a hospital setting and completely thought that a doctor would be super involved in the process because up until I went into labor, I'd been meeting with an OBGYN regularly. But when I actually was in labor and gave birth, it was a labor and delivery nurse who was with me basically until like the last 15 minutes. I was in labor for 24 hours. And all of the doctors were really busy. They had like emergency C-sections and other things that they were doing. And my birth was relatively, fortunately, relatively straightforward comparatively. But my labor and delivery nurse, I don't remember the doctor at all because she was barely there. But I really remember her, and she decided not to take her breaks. She worked long after her shift just to stay with me and help deliver this, well, basically deliver this baby. And so yes, I just wanted to give a quick
Love it.
shout out to the nurses, shout out to and she had to be the one making decisions as well because there weren't doctors available. Someone had to help me and continue to support me through the process, do my cervical exams, all of that. So anyways, I'm so with you there, having had that firsthand experience recently. She was my angel. She was incredible, and a nurse again, that doesn't get the same level of respect. Actually, a doctor came in for like 2 minutes, and the nurse tried to communicate a few things to her, and she kind of shut the nurse down. Things that actually would have helped my labor progress more quickly. I won't get into that too much, but it was pretty straightforward, simple things, like nothing too complicated, but the doctor didn't really listen to her, hear her out. And so again, I just want to put that out there that there are a lot of professions that, again, maybe are traditionally more female. There's definitely plenty of men in the nursing field these days too, that aren't given the respect they deserve, and yet they are so hard, so essential, so important. I just wanted to share that personal experience really quickly before we move on.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that and the importance. Yeah. So that's something that you, it is actually, since I was aiming for becoming a midwife a while ago and did the nursing program here in Sweden as well, I know that the nurses are always the advocates of the patients and are in between the patient and the doctors. And the doctors are really focusing on one thing, which is really important, like you said, if there's emergencies and things like that. But birth is a natural occurrence. So instead of seeing it as a sick, it's not like you're coming in sick. You need support. And as a doula, that's what I've also understood, how important that nurture is, like nurturing the mother during labor. Like you said, you had someone that made you feel safe. So much can happen during. So that's one thing that we are still not there. That's why maybe we are sometimes feeling the pain. I mean, there are still in the majority of the world, because we live in a bubble in the West, still in majority of the world, women are still second-class citizens. They are not being heard, seen, respected, suppressed still. And that rage can come up even for us in the West. That's where the rage comes, that inequality. And then we have the intersectionality. I saw somewhere that one of the themes would be inclusion, that what if you put on the other layer of ethnicity, for example, of socioeconomic background, the more layers you put on that, first like the female and then all of those other layers, it becomes very fragile. And there are, I mean, in countries where we think we have equality, there's still a lot of inequalities and other expectations. So I think it's really important. And what we said just to finalize this answer, is that at least now we can take, let us not be afraid to take empowerment of when it comes to spirituality. So one thing I wrote in my thesis recently is that religion and spirituality has not diminished. It's just becoming more and more personal. People are not feeling anymore like they need to go to a certain congregation, temple, or anything. They can do it. And I think that's the movement of the feminine, moving from the outside to the inside, to going into your personal journey. And all spiritual practices can are religion. It's like completely, it just doesn't have to be an institution anymore. That's why the work that we do, we infuse whatever we feel benefits those that will be in circles. So for like the new moon ceremony, we always, in the different ceremonies, we bring in different aspects, we bring in different practices, we try to merge, and that's the feminine. If you just want to be on a straight line doing one thing, and this is how it's always been done, then these type of like communities maybe not for you. Maybe you need something like that, but I think many people don't, and that's why you see the diminishment of the space that these traditional institutions hold. It's still very important in many countries. Again, we cannot generalize what's happening in certain Western countries. It's still different in the US than it is in the Nordics. So we have a lot of differences. But yeah, I think this is such an important topic. And I think the birth topic we will get into in a later episode as well. And just getting into that is so interesting. And what else did you want to share? You had one last thing that was important for this new moon.
Yeah, I just wanted to share a few quick reflections on what you said, and then I'm going to share that last thing. It's just these conversations are so compelling and exciting, especially to be having them, you know, during this where we are kind of at this point in time, this point in what will soon be history, maybe her story before too long. But you mentioned the kind of the rage that, you know, kind of comes up, and that is very much this Lilith energy that I had, you know, offered a call to work toward, like healing or harnessing. So again, with rage and anger, it can light the fire that can fuel us and move us forward to make change. You know, there's nothing wrong with anger. Part of healing this Aries wound with Chiron there right now is healing our relationship to anger so that it doesn't, you know, implode within us or explode in directions that aren't necessarily helpful or beneficial. So anger can be a really powerful tool, and it can be harnessed in such a beautiful way to drive change. But at the same time, we also, you know, if anger is all we have, then, you know, we're not going to get very far, because it burns hot and fast and not always, again, in the direction we really want it to burn. So I think, you know, with this Lilith energy that we're working with the new moon, you know, allowing ourselves to feel the anger, the rage, the hurt, and recognize kind of what's at the core of that, you know, maybe what change needs to arise in order for that pain, hurt, anger to start to subside and to truly be healed and resolved. But then kind of moving back into that place of forgiveness, compassion, the Pisces energies that help us better focus that energy, because we're not being poisoned by it or weighed down by it. And again, you know, unforgiveness kind of impacts us in worse ways than it impacts others often. So that's kind of the Piscean message is, you know, if we can kind of move past some of the more toxic qualities of it, we can work with it in a more productive way. And then what you had mentioned about, you know, spirituality and religion, I think that one of the things that we sometimes forget is just how deeply embedded these stories, myths, these spiritualities, religions, etc., are in the fabric of our daily lives. You know, things that we think have nothing to do with spirituality, including, you know, how women are paid in the workplace. A lot of it roots back to spiritual and religious beliefs about women, about their impurity, their inferiority, and so on. And so a lot of this work around energy, around mythology, kind of looking back at these mythologies, at this history, something that we also do in these ceremonies, it's so important and so powerful, because then we can really start to get to the roots of all of this and start shifting our own beliefs and our own mindsets. Because even if we don't consider ourselves to be religious or spiritual, we probably are still playing out and working with these stories that are millennia old. And that's kind of why astrology works, because all of these planets and asteroids and whatnot are named after these, you know, millennia old deities and mythological figures and so on, many of which have, you know, religious underpinnings. So again, this is this work that we're doing, a lot of it feels kind of ancient in nature, but it's so relevant for where we are right now and can help us drive change going forward. On that note, I wanted to just mention asteroid Hera. Hera, the original queen of the gods in Greek mythology, the wife of Zeus. She is really prominent during this new moon because she's conjunct or sitting right next to Neptune. Neptune is also in Pisces. Neptune is also conjunct, sitting next to the new moon. So Neptune becomes a very important figure that we're working with, this planet. And Hera is often linked to jealousy, especially jealousy when it comes to other women. And so the reason she experiences this resentment, this jealousy, this vengefulness, this bitterness, is because her counterpart, her husband, Zeus, kind of forced her into marriage. He tricks her into, you know, inviting him in, basically, to her space, to her sacred space, by pretending to be a wounded animal. And when she invites him in, he rapes her and kind of makes her his wife. She didn't want to be his wife, and she had expressed that according to mythology, but he kind of tricks her into becoming his wife. And then after he tricks her, he goes on to have countless relationships with other mortals and immortals, bearing tons and tons of offspring from them. And Hera originally kind of goes against Zeus and tries to fight him, but he basically like forbids it and kind of, you know, overpowers her. And so she decides instead to go after the women and, you know, goddesses that he has affairs with, and their offspring as well. And so she becomes kind of this representative of like vengefulness and, you know, bitterness and jealousy and envy between women. And it's sad because that's, you know, she was the queen of the gods, you know, she was, you know, the representative of the great goddess before she's, you know, married off to Zeus in Greek mythology. And yet, you know, it becomes these patterns and these archetypes that we see kind of playing out, where, you know, women are pitted against each other, and, you know, we're made to believe that there's only so much space or so much room for us. So people have to compete. Or again, even just this theme of, you know, if we aren't everything that, let's say, a partner expects of us, that they'll just go take another partner. You know, we see this happen a lot in the world. And again, it creates, it's this feeling of disrespect. Disrespect is really at the core of it with Hera, that she can't stand. And so again, there's also some hurt, some woundedness, some bitterness, some rage, jealousy, you know, a lot of things that are carried in that archetype, that Hera archetype, that we're also being asked to heal right now. So that as we move forward, you know, women aren't being pitted against one another, or you know, feeling the need to turn against one another or compete with one another, because again, that really kind of opposes and goes against any of like the positive change that we're looking to create within feminism. But I think we've all experienced it, like in one way or another. Like, this is very much part of the female experience at this point. And so so Hera there again with Neptune, this planet associated with healing, with cleansing, with compassion, with forgiveness. There's this emphasis on being able to cleanse and heal and resolve some of those Hera wounds as well, in order to move forward, in order to really, you know, change the way that we approach things like feminism, and yeah, this new wave that's kind of cresting right now, like allowing it to take on a new theme, a new energy, and so on. So yeah, Lilith and Hera, two really strong mythological figures, both very complex, and both, you know, linked to this great goddess energy. Lilith was supposed to have been, you know, the first woman, Hera, the original great goddess. And yet, you know, so much was changed through history, through stories being told and myths being interpreted in a certain way. And it's all kind of played out in the collective and our collective consciousness and collective unconscious in ways that many of us aren't even aware of, right? And so right now we're working to shift that, change that, awaken ourselves to these stories, these myths, these truths, these underlying relational dynamics that again are ready to evolve in order to drive real change.
And definitely. And as you said, mythologies have changed and been shaped. What I'm studying right now, and especially from my ancient heritage from Kurdistan and what's like emerging there, this story of the serpent is so much older than we know. And Lilith seems to be also connected with a lot of I mean, to goddess Ishtar, of course, and that's even more ancient. So it's really interesting to tap into that. And I'm really excited to celebrate International Women's Day together with you and with everyone who's going to join us in the online ceremony. It will be on March 8th. And if you cannot join live, you will get a recording where you can do all the practices, listen in to everything that we've shared, and you can find it on my website, and you can connect with us on Instagram and Facebook if you have any questions for us before that. But you're welcome to join wherever you are on your spiritual journey, and at least to celebrate together as women in circle. Everyone is welcome, of course, but usually we're just women, because that's also the, I think that this new wave is calling in so many beautiful souls and those that really connect with the goddesses and with this frequency that we're trying to harness. So it's going to be beautiful, and I'll share the link in the show notes for everyone. And if you have enjoyed this episode, I would love for you to leave a comment or share it with your community. Also, if you have any requests on any topics that you would love to hear, let me know. And I want to thank Diana as well for sharing your wisdom, and can't wait to be in ceremony together.
Thank you, Sharon, and thank you to everybody who tuned in. I'm also really looking forward to the ceremony and hope to see many of you there.